You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. A study published by the nonprofit organization Rebuild Local News found the U.S. has lost roughly 75% of its local journalists since 2002. Joining me now to talk about the study and what the decline in local news staff means for communities are Northwestern University Medill Local News Initiative founder Tim Franklin. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Good to be with you, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Rebuild Local News President Steve Waldman. Thanks for being with us, Stephen.
Thank you for having me.
And Source Media Properties Audience Engagement Editor Brittany Schock. Welcome to the program, Brittany.
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate your being here. Stephen, your study found the U.S. has had a 75% decline in local journalists since 2002. How did you calculate that?
This was a partnership with a firm called Muckrack, which is a public relations services firm that crawls the internet continuously looking for bylines and articles by journalists. So we worked with them to comb through all those bylines and stories and apportion them out by county and other factors. And so we were able to get a granular look at how many journalists there are in the country. And this complements the work that Tim's group at Medill has done that has shown us how the numbers of outlets. And it's basically a similar story, just as the Medill study has shown a steep decline in the number of news outlets. Our study has shown a equally steep decline in the number of journalists.
Stephen, what can you tell us about your findings for Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana specifically?
Well, Ohio, the average for the country in 2002 was about 40 journalists or journalist equivalents per 100,000 people. Ohio now has about 8. So that's a drop from about, it's a little bit apples and oranges, but basically dropped from around 40 to under 8. And that is basically true for the Cincinnati area as well. And Kentucky is in the similar vein. And one of the things that we found with this study is that the collapse is pretty broadly spread. Like, we kind of went in wondering whether or not this might be more in certain regions or, only a rural problem. It is quite exacerbated in rural problems, but it turns out there are certain suburban and urban areas where it's also so basically those states have all dropped, I would say slightly, they're slightly worse than the national average, but the whole country has gone down a lot.
Hmm. Tim, tell us a little bit more about how these findings that Stephen was talking about, how they compare with your research at the Medill Local News Initiative.
Sure, Lucy. So, Stephen looked at journalists, and we've been studying outlets, both loss and gains in outlets. And this data goes back over the past 20 years. And, what we see is there are more than 200 counties across the U.S. that are entire news deserts. No newspaper, no digital-only site, no ethnic media, no public radio in those counties. And there are about 1,550 counties across the U.S. that only have one news source remaining. So you lump that all together, Lucy, and you're looking at more than 50 million Americans that have limited to no access to local news. And the problem in your area is particularly acute in Kentucky, which is one of the hardest hit states in the country with loss of local news outlets. It ranks a fourth in the country in terms of the percentage of counties. 80% of all counties in Kentucky are either news deserts or one source counties, and 6 counties in Kentucky are actual news deserts. Ohio has 3 news desert counties and 42 one source counties. That's a little more than half of the counties in Ohio, which, believe it or not, is about the national average. And Indiana has five news desert counties, most of them in the southeastern portion of the state. So, we're all living through this historic transformation and how news is consumed and produced and delivered and paid for. And so we've seen the collapse of the business model that has propped up local news for many, many decades.
So, Tim, does this mean there are places across the country that have literally no reporters covering them?
Yes, unfortunately. Like I said, there are more than 200 counties where there's nothing. Mm-hmm. There's no news source in that county. But as bad as that is, Lucy, it's the local news crisis is actually worse. When you look at what some refer to as zombie newspapers or ghost newspapers across the country that are newspapers in basically name only, where there's very little local original reporting happening in those places. So, this is a problem that is pervasive. The impacts on communities are profound. And, this is something that I think we're going to have to figure out for the future of communities and even democracy.
Brittany, does any of this surprise you? I mean, the source outlets, news outlets are all about reporting on communities that have been lacking local news coverage, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. We were founded not only to fill a hole in the news ecosystem that was missing, but also in a way to do news differently, because I think in addition to news disappearing, I think that people are craving something different when it comes to their traditional news coverage. Every once in a while, philosophy can get very draining. You hear a lot of people say they just don't like to watch the news. News avoidance is at an all-time high. So we also thought it was very important to cover news in a different way.
Well, we're talking about the decline in local news staff and the impact on communities. Have you noticed a change in your local news coverage? Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, "What started out as a canary in the coal mine level of concern at the beginning of the internet age has developed into a full-blown local information desert crisis. In many ways, in this internet age, we've never been more connected or more disconnected at the same time when it comes to local news. Add to the problem the accuracy of what is posted by just about anyone. My long-term concern is that we now have a generation or two having no idea of the need and value of local news coverage, but they do have TikTok." Tim, what do you think about this? Is this, Steve points to young news consumers. What is the impact for young potential news consumers different for older people like me, or is this bad for everybody?
Well, first of all, it was a very astute email that you got. There have always been generational differences in news consumption. We study news consumer behaviors here at Medill. In fact, we just fielded a poll that we're going to be producing the results of next month. And you do see wide generational gaps in how different age groups consume news. So if you're under 29, you're likely to get news from social media, including TikTok. And so that's fine. But the issue is it's not always easy to tell the credibility of where that news and information is coming from. It's likely not coming from an established news brand or a news organization that has ethical guidelines and that corrects mistakes and fact checks its information. So, I think there's a big news literacy problem across the country, and it's especially profound when you get into the area of social media. For news consumers that are, you know, over the age of 55, they tend to consume local news to a much greater degree, and also through more traditional sources, including in many cases still print newspapers, but also digital only sites, newsletters, and other more traditional forms.
Brittany, from a business perspective, why are so many communities lacking local news coverage? Are there just not enough advertisers to cover the costs that come into play when you're trying to produce a news product?
I think that's part of it. I think you have to, if you're in local news, you have to be very agile these days when it comes to how you're going to make your money. Advertising alone simply isn't going to cut it. And so many news organizations, ourselves included, have been turning to more of a community support model. We do have a content gate. We sell memberships. As of last year, actually, about 70% of our editorial payroll was funded through our news supporter programs. So, our membership programs, our newsroom partners, things like that, that is the support model that we are moving towards as opposed to relying on advertisers. And it shows in the trust and the investment that we have in our community as well. According to our reader survey last year, 95% of respondents, which we had over 4,000 respondents, say that they trust us. And I think that goes to show, that we rely on our community and our community relies on us.
Stephen, I know your study really looked at these journalism positions and how many have disappeared. Did you look at all into media ownership structures and how much they've changed since 2002? I guess I'm wondering how much of a factor that is in these disappearing journalist positions.
We do think that is a big factor, because if you look at certain states like, comparing Massachusetts and say California to affluent blue states, and California's number of journalists went down much more than Massachusetts. And we think that that's because they had a lot of newspapers owned by hedge funds, and that newspapers that are owned by hedge funds tend to cut back on their staffing more. And it comes back to that phrase that Tim used of zombie newspapers. So it's not just, the counties that don't have, any reporters. It's even in the places where there are reporters or outlets, they are very, very spread thin. And someone who is covering one county now might be covering four counties, and it's going to get much more superficial and infrequent and less local. So, and the evidence is that ownership structure matters a lot, that the family businesses, family newspapers and nonprofits are more likely to hold the line on staffing than the ones that are owned by financial firms like hedge funds or private equity. Now, everyone is suffering from the overall drop in advertising that was caused by the internet and Google and Facebook. So there's kind of a tidal wave that affect everyone. But what we found was that within that general collapse, there were differences. There are some places like Vermont is doing like five times better than, most other states. And that appears to be that they had more family-owned newspapers. They have more public media. They have some great new nonprofit websites like Vermont Digger. They have universities where the student journalists are playing an important role. So it gave a little bit of hope that, all these efforts that everyone has been throwing at this, they're small relative to the size of the crisis. We need a lot more resources into it. But in those areas where we've kind of done all of them, it really has turned the corner.
We have a caller on the line. Hey, Joy, thanks for listening. Thanks for your call. What's your question?
Oh, hi. Okay, well, real quick, before I throw my question out there and jump off for the response, I did want to mention, I think that one thing that doesn't get talked about, in addition to the changing trends of where people get their media, is that people are just kind of tired with as it relates to television media, because it's all kind of same, and it's no Al Shadakatis, no George Clooney's dads anymore that make things personal and make you want to watch and try different angles. That said, my quick question is, are there, to you guys' knowledge, any types of journalist organizations, especially those that may have like local chapters and affiliations? And if so, why aren't they, or couldn't they, you know, put together a type of campaign that will start to target younger folks to even think about journalism as a potential career path?
Thank you, Joy. Appreciate that. I know that here locally, there's a Society of Professional Journalists. There's a Greater Cincinnati chapter that works with student journalists and has contests for them and training and all sorts of things. Brittany, I know you're not in Greater Cincinnati, but are you aware of organizations that work with local young people to try to encourage them?
Other than ours. just this past summer, actually, we hosted for the first time, a journalism fellowship program where we invited local high schoolers to come in and spend a week with us and learn how journalism works. I also want to mention, you know, to your caller's credit, like the being tired of not knowing who to trust. That is so real. It's just incredibly real. And the work that we do as a local news organization, everything goes back to building that trust. And especially in the younger generation, I do think that we have to meet people where they are. And I think when it comes to building trust, you have to start with trusting the people. You can't really trust the news and the brand if you feel like you don't know who the people are, and you know you don't know who they are. You don't know if they're part of your community or not. So that's why we make a great effort to try to be, to show people that we are of the community. We're not just aloof observers. That's why we host, every year we host a Newsroom After Hours concert where we have local bands come into our newsroom, and it's a free concert. And, you know, young people come who have never even heard of Richland Source and don't read the news, but now they're familiar with our brand and they know that we're fun people that you can trust to at least have a good time. So I do think that that is important, to just show people that we're real, we're human beings. You know, we're invested in this community and we just want to tell your stories. I think that's an incredibly important part of building community, is to show that you are part of the community.
Yeah. I would love to really underline what Brittany just said. I think, you know, we put a lot of effort as misinformation started to spread into, like, are there technological solutions and ways of doing automated fact checking and crowdsourcing and stuff like that. At the end of the day, trust is not going to be rebuilt, but through personal interactions with journalists. That has to be an important part of it. And the problem is that as we have fewer and fewer journalists and more population, most people have never met a journalist. And so these efforts, like what the Richland Source is doing, to view themselves not just as publishers, but as community institutions, is a real sea change in the way that local media has to think of itself. It has to connect to the community on a deeper, more personal level. And artificial intelligence is going to both make this worse, but also create opportunities for local news. It's going to make it worse because this whole, you know, avalanche of misinformation and making it so hard to tell what's real and what's fake is going to get way worse. But that means that people may be more increasingly inclined to, you know, turn to actual human beings that they can see and stick their finger in their chest and challenge and things like that. So it may create an opportunity too.
Yeah. Hoping nobody sticks their finger in my chest. Go ahead, Tim.
No, I just wanted to, I agree with everything that Steve and Brittany said, and just wanted to add that I think we also need to draw a distinction between trust in national news and trust in local news. You know, it's like people hate Congress, but they often like their local congressperson. In news, there's a huge gulf between trust in national news organizations and trust in local news organizations. And trust in local news is actually quite high when you look at it. And that's because they're in touch with their community. They're covering the local school board, local town council, local high school sports, local events. They're your neighbors. They're in your PTA. They're in your churches. And so there is a huge difference there. And a lot of times people lump together trust in media as just one big monolithic statistic, but that really doesn't tell the whole story. And by the way, I often cite Richland Source as a great example of a news outlet that is in touch with its community and is also practicing solutions journalism, which is the notion of writing about solutions to problems and not just the problems themselves. And so hats off to Brittany and the team there at the Source. I think they're doing some terrific work.
Yeah. Thanks for that call, Joy. Thanks for that question. We got an email from Nicholas who writes, I'm originally from New York. We've lost several news sources. It's an erosion of information and media that's important to democracy as a whole. It's heartbreaking. I want to talk briefly about the funding model. There's a lot, you know, we've talked about advertising. Brittany, you said there are other ways that your organization gets funded. Tim, how important is that? There are more and more nonprofit newsrooms that are popping up. How important is that funding model to making this work?
It's hugely important. I mean, 10 or 15 years ago, 80% of revenue that came into local news organizations was advertising. And advertising revenues declined about two-thirds just in the last decade. And you can't lose, you know, two-thirds of your primary revenue base and continue to function in the way that you have before. But we are seeing growth in reader revenue, whether it's digital subscriptions or memberships. We're also seeing a number of publications that are nonprofits, either legacies that are converting to nonprofit or nonprofit startups. That alone is not going to be a solution to the problem necessarily, but it can help, and it can help raise money from foundations and other charitable donors. So that definitely can help. And Steve can, you know, knows all about this, but we're also seeing growing momentum toward public policy for local news in a number of states across the country, including my state of Illinois, which passed a package just last year.
Brittany, we are running out of time, but you're on the front lines of this. What gives you hope for local journalism? We've had a pretty depressing conversation.
Well, like Tim said, solutions journalism is a huge part of it. It's reporting on responses to problems, not just the problems. But also, I do really think that we are lucky in that we are a small community and we are seeing people on the front lines every day. One of the great things about being a local journalist is you see the impact right in front of your face. And I think that's part of, you know, building a village and building a community. You have to be informed. You have to talk to your neighbors. And I think the more that we can connect with each other, the better off we'll be.
Well, I've been talking with Northwestern University Medill Local News Initiative founder Tim Franklin, Rebuild Local News President Stephen Waldman, and Source Media Properties Audience Engagement Editor Brittany Schock. Thank you all so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.